Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Well, welcome to the Church Planner Podcast. I'm your co-host, Chesley. Peyton's gallivanting the globe somewhere. I don't know. Maybe even his backyard right now. But I've got a friend with me, Nick Hall, who is doing some really great things when it comes to evangelism in the church. And if there's one thing that I think church planters do well, it's mission. But at the tail end of that, I don't feel like we do a great job of getting other people on mission. And a part of that is evangelism. And I think that the church has a dearth of evangelism today, probably because us millennials don't like the term unless it has to do with Apple. But here to talk about that, my friend Nick. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, Chesley. Glad to be here. Doing great. I'm in Minneapolis and it's summer. So this is like the 3 months a year. Everybody's happy.
Yes. Listen, it's out. It's finally starting. I'm starting to see blue sky today, but it was so gray and dreary and like 58 degrees. And I'm like, really? It's almost June. So I feel you, bro.
When you're from Arizona. So yeah, it's a different deal. There's not a lot of skin that's seen in the north. You're like, where did everybody go?
Yeah.
Bundled up and indoors and then everybody's happy. And
Yeah. I've always thought about, like, you know, for 9 months out of the year, probably one of the best thing churches could do is just hand out vitamin D pills.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to take this for communion. Everybody will be a little bit better going. Yeah. So no, it's good. Cool. Well, let's dive in a little bit. Let's talk about evangelism. You run Pulse. Used to be called Pulse. Now it's called Pulse Evangelism, right? And so you guys are leading the way on helping leaders, churches, everyday disciples learn how to evangelize in a non-freaky way. And which we definitely need, but what was the vision around what you've been trying to do and why the name change?
Yeah, man. Thanks for the question. So I got started doing this as a college kid and, my campus, like a lot of people's colleges, was a graveyard of spiritual activity. You know, Christian kids are leaving their faith. A ton of people are getting further from God. And I was in one of the campus, you know, groups, Campus Crusade, Navigators, University, Chi Alpha, you know, all the things. But, you know, we're praying and we're singing these songs while our friends, you know, are just kind of destroying their lives. And so this all started out of a prayer group that we were in as students, just praying for boldness, praying that we could actually follow Jesus. And then I wrote a paper in my English class titled Pulse. And so that's how this all started. And so it started as just a grassroots student-led, we want to reach our friends. None of us are really doing a great job at that. What does that even look like? And in large ways and small, we planned events, activities, trainings. And now fast forward 20 years later, we kind of have two pillars. One is, we want to do all things to reach those that are far from God. And then the other pillar, which is a means by which we do a lot of it, is we want to find and unleash the evangelist. Like, we believe there's specific men and women. And then we want to unleash the evangelist that is in all of us who are called a follower of Jesus. So that's kind of what we do.
Yeah. So we train church planters all over the world, and there's a author, his name is Alan Hirsch. He talks about apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, and teacher. Yeah. So Alan's a good friend of ours. And one of the things that I've noticed is I don't think there's a really good way that the church has really understood how to identify people with the gift of evangelist. Would you talk about how you've been able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to identify, honestly, other than shepherd and teacher. you know, the prophets maybe are annoying you. The apostles are always bossing people around. I don't know. It's just, these are complicated, but I say, evangelists, like if I think of evangelists are, as a personality, they're people who are burdened and will always prioritize those that are further from God than those that are in the fold, right? So evangelists are people who are burdened for the lost. They're wanting to talk about the good news of the gospel. They probably are bothered by judgmental Christianity. You know, and so there's this kind of like this desire. I think of it like in a company, this is your sales department. Like your sales department exists mostly to live outside the organization mm-hmm. and draw people in, right? Like I'm trying to sell, I'm trying to point. And then when I'm in my organization, I'm reporting, hey, this works, this doesn't work. Here's things we need to be changing. Hey guys, they love it. They love it. Let's go. You know, but then it's like, we're going back out. We're going back out, right? And I think evangelism, to me, the word evangelist has largely been lost. I love that you mentioned Apple, because I think that's the tech world uses the word evangelist way more than the church does. I think it's God's instrument, just like the other offices. Paul says it's for the equipping of the saints to do the work of ministry. So,
yeah.
If you have an evangelist in your life or in your church, there's some things that will be happening. You will feel a burden for praying for people who need Jesus. You will be regularly talking about people who need Jesus. You will have trainings for how to reach people who need Jesus. You will be caring about the bigger C church more than your individual church. And so these are just some common things that I think the heartbeat of the evangelist is it, when it's in operation, you can see it. And but you also can see when it's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, you know, as a church planter, it was hard pressed to find an evangelist that would feel at home in a local church.
For sure.
But I think that you don't get the full expression and full health of a church if you don't have them. So how can church leaders, mainly senior pastors, church planters, create a conducive environment for somebody with the gift of evangelists to feel at home without feeling anchored?
Yeah.
If I could put it that way.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a story. I was with Luis Palau, who was this Argentinian evangelist. And so I traveled a lot with Billy Graham and Luis Palau and you know, as part of Campus Crusade. So evangelistic stuff was a lot of, you know, you're attracted to what you like, right? And so a lot of my learning was other weird people who just wanted to talk about Jesus. But Luis was leading this devotion once with a group of us. And he says, you know, and God gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists. You know, I burst out laughing because Luis was in his 70s. And without knowing it, he, you know, he gave all of us the bird while he was doing his, you know, so he kind of flicked us off.
Yeah.
His thing. And, you know, and I kind of joked and I said, Luis, I just realized the evangelist is the middle finger of the church. and he didn't really understand that, you know, and I kept running with it, you know, and I'm in my 20s. So
right.
Wild things are funny and inappropriate things are funny. And so I had a whole sermon on giving the church back the middle finger. And, you know, and I had all these ideas around it, you know, but I was just like, evangelism is like, it's the bold, for the good. It's the bold, like it's, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power mm-hmm. of God. So I would just say for pastors and leaders, I just would say, do you want your church to be a place that is prioritizing the lost? Do you want your church to be a place that is equipping believers to reach the lost? Now here's a criticism of evangelists is evangelists often love the stage and the mic and the sharing of the gospel, especially when they're doing it. Evangelists aren't frequently good at equipping the saints. But I would say that the strength of the evangelist for the church is, hey, we need you. So if I'm a church planter, if I'm a leader, I'm thinking, when you have your leadership team, let's say it's three, let's say it's four, let's say it's five, let's say it's you and your wife and your three kids, you know, but there has to be somebody around that table that's knighted to have the eyes of the evangelist, to have the heart of the evangelist. And I think the problem that exists, whether it's a small church or a mega church, is there is nobody at the table that is being tasked with that vantage point. Hey, like when you're looking at the church, I want you to look at our people and say, are we equipped to reach people? Are we equipped? And when you're looking out, you're saying, how are we going from the walls to the people? Right. And I think without trying to do so, the church, what ends up happening is you end up building teams, and all of the teams are there to serve the sheep. Right. And you got crabby sheep, you got whiny sheep, you got, you know, elder sheep, you got big giver sheep, and you're just in the sheep cleaning business. Right. Mm-hmm. But nobody's there saying, hey, are we getting the sheep to do what the shepherd did? Right. Yeah. Are we getting them to go outside? And I think that is the voice and the role of the evangelist, is to say, like, are we equipping people to live this out, you know, beyond these walls? And again, you said it missionally, right? It's like, but the more churches come and watch me do it, the more we fail. The more the church is, hey, let's follow him. Jesus is the one who's helping us learn how to do this in an incarnational way. Well, now we're activating people in every walk of life. And I'll even say, I said this in a sermon, said evangelism isn't me trying to get you to wear my clothes or me to wear your clothes. Evangelism is you figuring out the clothes that God has given you to wear in order to live out your faith in public. It's not optional.
Yeah.
Right. But the way you do it isn't going to be how I do it, nor should it be. I think a lot of evangelistic tools are really designed for extroverts, and they often are used to shame those who are not in that personality wheelhouse.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking as a church planter, I'm gifted and more AP. So
yeah,
apostolic prophetic. And, but my heart's always been the lost. But I'm not gifted as an evangelist. I've got some friends that are, and it's just like how they do it is I'm willing to do the work. I have gospel conversations. I go in, you know, as a missionary into my context, usually with the idea of, and I think this is best. I think an apostolic leader coming behind an evangelistic leader is awesome, you know, because they're saturating. And my evangelist friends are really good at catching them. And then once they get to baptism, they're like, what do we do with them? You know, I feel like I'm done.
Yes, that's where we need the shepherds and the teachers. But it's all of us are called to make disciples, right? And I think that's the... So for me, it's like, I look at it as like a... Because I grew up in the era where, hey, share your faith. There was a time when that was a common narrative.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was like the evangelism trainings were happening. And there was some kind of pressure for evangelism. And I think we have like just gone the totally opposite end of the spectrum where now people, they just don't think about it. They don't think it's their role. Most churches, I think the growth is transfer growth. Like there's very little conversion growth. And so just this idea of like a person coming to faith. And we often count converts because they left a church we didn't like for our church. And yeah, look at they converted to a better version of, you know, church. But in terms of like, are we seeking and saving? Are we ministering? So I look at it as like, number one, I want to get people praying for people. Pray for your friends. Pray for those in your life that need Jesus. So this is a tool I use all the time. It's just a card. It's just five plots. And simplest thing on earth. I'm like, I wish every believer on earth had a card with names that they were praying for. I wish every church on earth was built on who are we praying for, that this became part of our community groups, that this became part of our sermons, that this became part of, say, hey, you have your five, I have my five. Our goal is we're trying to pray for and incarnationally draw those in our life to Jesus, right? And so it's like, I'm going to start there. Hey, can we all pray? Like, I think everybody could do that, right? Yeah. And I'll joke and say, hey, take the card, write down the names, put it in your Bible or put it on your fridge, whichever you open more. Pause for humor, right? And then say, hey, take two cards, right? Just like we want, because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. and we want to start to pray. And then I take it from there to the next level of like, hey, can we train people to listen and see people? Right. So one of the things that we do and that I really firmly believe is that evangelism is more about listening than talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've made the mistake of making evangelism about a pitch and 6 points. And basically what ends up happening is the person on the other side feels like they're at a used car lot and they don't matter. Right. And it's like, this actually super encouraging. Like if you're a lot of pastors are introverts, right? And a lot of people are introverts, right? They're not loud about anything. So for me to say, hey, go be loud about Jesus is like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Like that's just beating them up.
Right.
For not being loud, you know?
Right.
But it's like, hey, how do we see people? How do we care for people? How do we listen? Right. How do I learn to be a kind person? Right. It's like the old, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. But it's like, So again, this is encouraging for every introvert and it's challenging for every extrovert, right? Hey, you're an extrovert. Your goal is to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You're an introvert. Good news. Your goal is to listen. You know, it's simple questions. Hey, what's your name? And then remember it. Call your right. server by their name. Ask them questions. Hey, what's your dream? How's your day? What do you want to do with your life? I like your tattoo. Tell me about it. You just care, right? And so that's how I take it from pray to listen. And then third level is equipping people to share their story of how God has changed their life. Just, you know, Revelation says we're going to overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And I think a lot of us have believed the lie that our testimony is boring. And it's just there is no boring, like God met you. Right. I don't care if it was in Sunday school. You didn't have to be a meth dealer, you know, to have a good testimony. Right. It's like,
right.
I'm listening and be like, bro, like I can totally relate with you, like overwhelmed, struggling and family life and looking for purpose. Man, I've been there. You know what happened? I encountered Jesus and it changed me. And I can't even describe it all, but man, my life is different. It's better. And I would love if you would want to look at him because he's the one, right? And then for me, the fourth level then is learning how to articulate my faith. But I think like we've flipped the diagram, right? Because it used to be do this. Nobody's doing it. So it's just like, how can we start to equip people to just love people, see people, look for the opportunities? Because again, one of the things I'd say is that where an evangelist is missing, sinners become the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And culture war Christianity thrives in the absence of the evangelist, right? Because it's like, we're always mad at those people. And those people is a moving target. It used to be this stream of Baptists. Now it's a different stream. It used to be these charismatics. Now it's this, you know, and it's like, we always have. They're these annoying, yeah. It's the liberals. It's the, you know, gay people. It's the, you know, whoever it is. It's just like those people. The evangelist says, you know what, like how you feel about those people says more about you than it does about those people. You know how God feels about those people? He welcomes them. He's calling them. He has more for them. Right. But it's a way more invitational approach.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think in God's eyes, there's no such thing as those people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
As I'm listening to you, I know there's a difference between doing the work of an evangelist, which everybody should do as a disciple, and then there is the gift, the equipping gift of evangelist that Jesus gave to the church.
Yeah.
What are the two, and how do we differentiate between the two in the church?
Yeah. So we all know, like Jesus gave, you know, the Great Commission. You know, one of my friends says it's the Great Commission, not the Good Suggestion. And, you know, and it's Jesus says, go, right? Go. And it's like, as you're going, make disciples, teach them to do all, right? Baptize them and teach them. And, you know, and it's like, how am I incarnationally doing that, right? So part of that is, you know, Paul's saying to Timothy, do the work of the evangelist, you know, discharge all the duties of your ministry, right? So it's like, and Paul says to Philemon, I pray that you'd be active in sharing your faith. And he says, so that you may experience every good thing we have in Christ Jesus. Like, I really believe that, like, when we share something, we own it, right? Until you share it, you don't own it. Like, it's like, it moves from knowledge, head knowledge, to like, wait a second, okay, this actually works in the real world, right? So I think, like, there is something that comes alive, right, when you do it out and you're having conversations, and it's just this beautiful thing. You see people grow leaps and bounds in their faith, not based on the ease, but based on a conversation they had or an objection they had or a hard situation they're in, right? And so Paul is saying, and I think to Timothy and to all of us, hey, church, you're called to do the work of the evangelist. Like, part of the ministry of Jesus is Jesus the evangelist. He is seeking and saving the lost. So that's for all of us. All of us are called to love our neighbors. All of us are called to, you know, point people to another kingdom. All of us are called to draw people. And, you know, starting in our home, starting in our neighborhood, right? Who are the people near you? Like, taking inventory of it, praying for them, right? Now, but how do we do that? I think the main way that we do those things is by using the tools that God gave us. So I'll say this. I am an evangelist. Like, that's who I am. Nobody had to teach me to share my faith. I just started doing it the second I knew Jesus, just telling people about Jesus. Like, my joke is I had to go to church to learn not to share my faith. Because it wasn't until I was around Christians that I realized people don't do it. I mean, I'm just going to tell it for everybody listening. Sharing your faith is actually not that weird to those that are pagan. Like, there's even a Penn and Teller, I don't know which one it is. He's like, how bad would you have to hate me to not tell me about something that could save me? Like, how much would you have to hate me to keep that to yourself?
Yeah. And Penn, right? Like, is an atheist. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, but this narrative of like, where did we get this idea that faith is personal? Where did it come from? It didn't come from the Bible. It didn't come from the disciples. Like, where did it come from? It came from culture, and it came from the, you know, the accuser, and it came from the greatest liar of them all, right? And we believe this cultural narrative about our faith. So the evangelist, like, as an evangelist, I don't share my faith nearly as much when I'm not around evangelists. The same thing is true. Like, I don't read my Bible as much when I'm not around teachers. Like, the gifts exist for the blessing of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like, you can tell, like, why do people love the Bible? Like, most people don't. Like, most people don't love the Bible. It's a weird book with really weird pages, weirdest paper you've ever seen, black print, bold black print, red print, maps. What the heck is this book? It's just a weird book. If you love the Bible, I would say there's probably a teacher that somewhere in your journey helped you see the Bible and love the Bible. So, like, you're living proof that the gift has blessed your life, right? So if you want to have a burden for the lost, like, the evangelist exists to help us. Hey, man, you can do this. Like, God's called you. Like, there is... And so I look at it as like, what does the evangelist do? The evangelist inspires. The evangelist gives real life examples. And the evangelist equips, right? So I'm going to inspire you. You can do this. Hey, this is like the guy at the gym. How many of you guys are sick and tired of being fat? Let's go. So I'm going to inspire
you.
And then there's the examples. Look at Joe. Look at Tommy. Look at Susan. Look at their picture before and after. That could be you.
Yeah.
Examples. Now, for the next 60 days, we're going to show up at 6 a.m. You know, and it's like, so now I'm helping people. Like, I've inspired you.
Yeah.
I'm giving you examples that, hey, you can do this. Normal people do this. And now I'm giving you tools. But I think often we just start with the tools, and we often give people how-to solutions for want-to problems.
Yeah. That's very.
So it's like, I'm telling you how to do something that you don't want to do. Hey, you know how you can be healthy? Like, you don't want to be healthy. Like, I don't, you love Cheetos. Like, that's not healthy, isn't your thing. Like, so, I mean, again, it's just like, how are we helping people? And then the other side of it is, I just think on the simple sense, church planters, leaders, it's like, we need to give people a vision that God can, will, and wants to use them mm-hmm. to see miracles. Mm-hmm. Like your the peak of your faith is not attending church and giving a tithe. Like most pastors, they'd be like, man, I want to tell you about my best leaders. They come there all the time, they tithe, and they don't complain. I love them. Right? Like that's like, you know, and if they're on the parking crew, then they're making it on the wall. Like then they're like, these are the Hall of Fame. And I just think like most Christians don't even know that God can and wants to use them. Because there is nothing more addictive than feeling the presence of God and feeling the joy it is to be used by God.
Right. Yeah.
And when you're like, holy cow, like that just happened. Like that's a better drug than anything they're peddling down the road from my office. Like that's the good stuff, you know? And it's like, that is the Holy Spirit moving and activating the saints to do the work.
Very much so. So I have a working theory that when Jesus gave the Great Commission, and then you look at Paul writing about, the five equipping gifts, and obviously there's 27 gifts he writes about throughout the New Testament. I don't think it's an exhaustive gift, but what he's saying is God has given everybody something.
Yeah.
And my working theory is this, that Jesus never meant for making disciples to be an individual one-on-one mission, but that it was a collective. It was a collective command. It was the commission was for us to work together, because you probably have this thing. I'm really good at heathens and leaders.
Sure.
I'm not really good with the in-between.
Yeah.
You know, wiping noses and changing diapers type thing. I'm just not good at it.
Yeah.
And yet I'm sure you have that same thing. I've been around a lot of evangelists that are great until baptism, and then there's just like,
yeah, what do I do now?
What do I do now? You know? And so, I am beginning to see that, and this is my working theory, that we should be doing this together rather than apart and really start working on handoffs. And so, you know, the apostle, evangelist, prophet, pastor, and teacher should all be working as a team to help grow people rather than doing it themselves one-on-one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your thought process about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the questions we're asking a lot in our walls again, and we changed the name Pulse to Pulse Evangelism. Like we want to be explicit. Like our purpose is we're building a home for the evangelists. Like that's what we're doing is we want to be driving this question of where is the evangelist? Where is the evangelist? Where is the evangelist? And like, we want churches to be asking that. We want believers to be asking that. Like, I would love for people to know who they are. Like, there are a ton of evangelists out in the world right now that don't know who they are. Like, they're trying to pastor. They're trying to do these things, and they're not great at it. Because they're not in their sweet spot. Now, right. I don't believe that God gives me a pass, right? To be like, hey, Nick, your job is just to tell people about Jesus. The rest of the stuff, that's not for you. Like my invitation is the same as yours. It's follow Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's parts that are easier for me. And then there's parts that are more challenging for me.
Absolutely.
Right? And I think the strength of the body is that's like we become a well-rounded a family, right? We're not like so top heavy. Like if it's all evangelists leading the charge, like we're going to try to reach everybody and we're going to do nothing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's just going to stay surface. Right. And I think the seeker sensitive movement in my mind was like evangelists became lead pastors. And, but the word evangelist was gone.
Yeah.
And it was just the part of the evangelist that was like sharing something compelling on the mic. It wasn't the equipping of the saints. It was just like, man, Billy Graham crusades are awesome. Let's do that in church every Sunday. Right. And it's like, you know, and it's like, and again, like people are surprised when I'm like, I don't go to a church like that. I, I have theories and convictions and whatever. Like, oh, really? I would have thought you would. Like, no, no, no. Like, I'm outreach. Do whatever you can. Outreach. Do it. Rock band. You want to shoot somebody from a cannon? Like, what do you want to do? Like, I don't care. Like, if you're trying to meet people where they are, that's beautiful. But like, what does it mean to help people become a follower of Jesus? That's a different conversation altogether.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So we need these gifts in operation and strengthen each other. Like, I need the teacher. We need the shepherd. We need the apostle. We need the prophet. You know, and so, yes, like I need all of them in my life. My love for the Bible increases or decreases based on the influence of teachers in my life. My love for discipleship increases or decreases based on the influence of shepherds in my life, right? Now, most leaders, to give leaders some slack, most of us are doing what we were modeled.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And most of the models, it's kind of like, how do you know how to be a parent? Right. And it's like, most of us are like, I don't want to do what they did. Right. Like, that's like
they
the
did
only.
This well, they did this and this and this and this and this not so well.
Yeah. It's just like, don't do the 50 things and try to do like hugs, more hugs. Just,
more hugs. Yeah. Totally.
You know, and I think most of us as leaders are like, we're doing what we were taught. And I think now we're living in this time where it's like, man, was what we taught, is that like God's best? And and how do we come back to the first love and the first things, and, you know, and just see this kind of revival of the everyday believer, the significance of the everyday believer, right? I mean, all you could say to our young evangelists, because we're training these, we're trying to find 100 every year. And these are leaders who some are going to be pastors, some are going to be in the marketplace, some are going to work in nonprofit, and a very small amount of them will be, you know, full-time evangelists, just because that's not something that people can do.
Right.
It's not a big demand. But it's like, I'm trying to train them up, and I'll say this to every cohort. I'm like, guys, you're not going to believe this. Everywhere you live, there are people who will pay you to be an evangelist. And they're like, what? What, you know? What does this mean? I'm like, I'm telling you, dude, some of these people will pay to be an evangelist and they don't even know Jesus.
Yeah.
And they will pay you to be an evangelist. And they will pay you to get around people who are lost. And you're getting a paycheck to be around lost people. I mean, guys, it's called a job.
A job.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, again, it's just like, I think bringing the significance of there is no like sacred secular divide. This is like, no, like God's calling us to incarnationally take over, right? And this is the power Jesus talked about. It wasn't to overthrow the government. It was to change the human heart.
Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning, but Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need, like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out reliant.org/CPP.
So as a church planter, I'm looking at what you're talking about, and so my thought process is, do you go into churches and you help them identify the evangelists in their midst? I know, outside of the fact that we do training to teach everybody to do the work, but like, have you had experience, like stories of going, hey, we identified these people that were being underutilized that God had gifted for this very thing? Do you have anything like that that helps churches and church planters think through that?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that this is what we're building every day here, right? We are trying to find the leaders that have the burden to come alongside them in their setting, right? So this can look like several things. One is it can look like pastors and leaders that come and be a part of workshops or collaborative teams or meeting like-minded friends, you know, sharing stories where, yes, like we're helping implement a culture of evangelism where this is going to be a priority, right? And then it's like, well, what does that look like? How do we do this? Well, it's like, okay, there's a list of people that can come and could share, could do a training, or can come and serve you. There's something that could happen locally, right? And so a lot of times it's, if we're planning something collaboratively with a community, that's the best way to find those in that community that are going to continue to carry that torch, right? So everything we're doing is like, whether it's an outreach or a training, our goal is to find those that are burning in that direction, because that is the way that this is sustained long beyond somebody coming and going, right? It's like, I'm trying to find those burning ones. And a lot of pastors know who they are. They're like, man, I have three people or I have two people and I just don't know what to do with them. You know, and they're always trying to do things I don't want them to do. And they have all these ideas that I don't want to do. And, you know, it hasn't been approved. And what are, you know, and I just don't know what they're going to even preach on. You know, what would they even say? You know, so I think like helping find some safe, you know, curriculum or resources. Like, we are not in the business of like trying to push Pulse or our stuff or anything. Like, we just want to advance the cause of seeing people, reaching people, seeing people growing in their love of Jesus. And so for me as a leader, now I am an evangelist, whatever, but it's like, man, I think that like we need healthy leaders, right? Who are able to understand, the burden, the pressure, you know, and then we need those that know what to say. Right. And so those are kind of the two sides for us of our training. Is one side of it is like who you are matters more than what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of it is like, hey, what you do, like the tactics of it, like do matter. Theologically, they matter. Helping people come at a relevance, understanding the context and culture. And so, yeah, these are things that we're building. So we have an auditorium that we're building out now for regular trainings for pastors and leaders and groups. We have a lot of digital resources. And then we have like a network of coaches, pastors, and leaders across the country that they're just trying to advocate more evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
We're like a bunch of misfit toys that have found each other.
That's ours with New Breed. We're like a bunch of misfit toys that apostolic leaders that are planting missionally. Yes. Yeah, yes. Very much so. My whole goal though is like, God, can we get past, well, we should do it this way and just start trying to work together. I know it's messy, but I see the church, the local church, without the benefit of the prophet, the apostle, and the evangelist. They're not like, people don't have a problem with the pastor teacher. It's the three that are the weird ones, you know.
Yeah.
But without them in the mix, we lack a fullness and health. And I love what you're doing. And so I'm just like, how do we get people invested? How do we identify them and get them the resources they need? So I love what you're doing. You're doing what we're doing for apostolic leaders, for evangelists.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I would say for me, I see myself as like a little bit apostolic and then evangelist.
Right? Oh, I would agree with you. You wouldn't have started Pulse without it. Yeah.
But it's, again, we need each other. Like, we need each other. We can't do it alone. My life, again, like, my life was radically impacted by evangelists. My life was saved by a shepherd.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the evangelists were teaching me how to drive off a cliff, right? Like, they were, like, the models of the past generation were a quick way for me to end up as, like, a cocaine addict. You know, or like have affairs and all the things. Like, it's just, man, the way that ministry was done in the past generation was very destructive. And it's like the systems that enabled it, man, they did awesome things, but there was a lot of human casualties.
Yeah.
And families and marriages and, but it's all for the Lord. Like that was like a big, you know. When I first got married, one of my mentors, the Billy Graham team, asked me to go to Ireland for like 3 months. And he's like, we've all had to do it, brother. Whoever doesn't leave wife and son and daughter and, you know, for the gospel isn't worthy. And I was like, crap, you know, what do I do? You know?
Yeah.
And it was the guy who married me that was like, Nick, if you leave, I'm going to kill you. Like, this is, you're married now. You got to be a husband. You're figuring this out. Bro. And so, yeah, like we need the balance of the gifts in order for all of us to be healthy. I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone, right? This isn't just one side. It's like, man, there's so much I have to learn from those that are different from me. And it's just how do we do this well? How do we activate the believer? And that's for all of us, right? It's like, how do I be a well-rounded follower of Jesus?
Yeah. I'd like to transition a little bit because following and digging deep into your stuff. I've been working with digital ministry for the last 10 years and I've been on the innovative side of church leadership in that regard. And we did a couple research projects, Gen Z technology and the future of faith in America. So we wanted to see where is this thing headed in the next 5 to 10 years? And out of that, we found that personal branding for leaders is very, very important. And you and I both know, you just said all the dangers that come along with that. And so you got this culture that just understands a specific way of being in an American context. And I'm seeing more and more of the digital influencer and the evangelistic zeal, missional zeal inside of digital spaces on social media. And there's some really great things about it. There's some really dangerous things about it, but the reality is it is what it is. And so I see what you guys have done with Pulse, and I think that might be a model for the church moving forward, that there are going to be more and more leaders like you that are thinking this way. I mean, you're already seeing like guys like John Mark Comer leaving a church to start practicing the way.
Yeah,
he's doing something more akin to that digital space. Now, I think he's doing it more in a pastoral teaching role. I think there's a part of him that's, taking on the mantle of Dallas Willard for our generation. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be more of those guys that are moving that direction. Like, I would love for you to talk a little bit about the digital side of what you guys have done, because mm-hmm. I think I just see a lot more people going that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, I think anybody who's got a gift or a passion, if you're a pastor and you're a leader that's, watching this, listening to this, like, the feeling of like when people reach out to you, like your first instinct is, what do they want? You know, it's like, what do you want? Like, you want to sell me something?
Yeah.
You have a book series, or you want me to do something for you, right? And when you're a young leader, it's a ton of people reaching out that want you to do something to help them do what they want to do. And so it's like very transactional relationship that's developed and expectation. And so like, yes, like the digital space is there. Everybody's on their phone. The data is crazy. How much time people like, so yes, we need to be asking the question of how do we get the right conversations there? We can't change the fact that everybody is there. Like that Elvis has left the building. That is not like, is there dumb phone movement now? Yes. Like people are now moving to try to simplify, but the phone is just there. TikTok isn't going anywhere. And if it does, something else will start in its place, right? Like this generation wants to be out there. They're using their voice. So the question is, how do we come alongside them? Right? How do we shepherd them? And it's like, it's reverse engineering, because most of us who are pastors and leaders, like we never got a microphone until we had gone through like 50 checks.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you volunteered, you cared, you served, you babysat, you cleaned you put up chairs.
We saw you for 12 to 15 years. We know your character. Yeah. Now you get now you get to lead. Yes.
Yes. And this generation has flipped the script. Like they have the microphone because they were born.
Yeah.
right? It's like they have the micro. I mean, my son wants to be an influencer. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's got a neighbor kid that has 50,000 followers. And it's like everything I can do to keep him away from this world. And no, you're not going to have a phone. And no, you're going to be, yes, you're the part of the lame family. I'm sorry. And that's just what it is. But it's like these kids are there, right? And so, yeah. So there's two questions there. One is it's like, how do I engage people digitally? What does that look like? But number two, and I think the more strategic way is, how do I come alongside those that God is using?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's not to use them. It's so that God will use them. Right. Because so we reach out to these young men and women and I would say across the board, when we reach out to them, they're all like guarded up because they think we're just like everybody else wanting them to sell something or do something. We're like, no. We see God's hand is on your life. We just want to come alongside what you're doing and we want to help you last.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have two simple goals on the digital kind of influencer spaces. One is we want you to love Jesus and know Jesus in such a way that what you represent of him is true.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second goal is that you last. So that in 5, 10, 20 years, you still love Jesus.
Yeah.
Because if those two happen, we all win. And if mm-hmm. those two don't happen, we all lose. Right? And so I think it is... I've wanted to. I'm 40. I just turned 43. And it's like, I want to be an influence and I want to be an influencer. And man, can I be like Judah Smith or Rich Wilkerson or can I have a Craig Groeschel numbers? Like, man, that is like a losing game. Like, I don't know why people are popular and why people are not. I don't choose the cards. The people I wish were chosen aren't chosen. You know, this is just the plight of leadership. But it's like, I can be like, God, I want to be faithful where I am. I want to have blinders on to actually be content with what you've given me. But I do want to keep my eye out for those that your hand is on. And how can I help you? How can I strengthen you? How can I come alongside you? And so we have seen our digital reach, you know, exponentially grow. Really just through the influence of an army of men and women that God's already using. And so like, we're coming alongside them. Now it's a mess. It is a total mess.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, we've seen kids that had 50,000 followers. Now they have 3 million and they're, you know, they're preaching and doing things on TikTok. And I'll be honest, half of it I think is so weird, you know?
Right.
You know, I'm just like, it's not for me.
Right.
It's not for me. But like, you know what? My 12-year-old son, he loves all of it.
Gets it. Yes. They get it.
He's like, I show him some of these videos of the kids that I think are, I don't know. And then he's like, man, Dad, I want to pray for people. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'm old. That's what I'm learning.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but yes, it is like, how are we using the mediums of our culture and of our day to reach as many as possible? So I think, Pastor, I mean, every leader that comes in our office, young leader, like we have them all. Hey, how are you using social media? Like, because I mean, it's just an exercise of like sharing their faith, being public. Like, what does it look like to use your platform? What does it look like to use your voice? Now, I know a ton of leaders, and I'm one of them, where it's like, it is toxic for me the more I'm on, right? Like, I just can't do it. Like, I can't follow a ton of people because I'll be honest, like, it's not good for me to see what those people are doing. Like, I can get judgmental. I can get insecure. And I get distracted from what God's called me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think as a leader, you need to, like, Francis Chan is a friend of mine and he's never had social media of any kind. Right. And he's even like, Nick, I remember when our sermons went online and it changed all of us.
Yeah.
Like overnight, it changed all of us, not for the better.
Well, right? And yet Francis did the Lake Hume circuit for 10 years.
Totally.
So, I mean, he wasn't probably thinking he was building his platform, but he totally was. So by the time Crazy Love comes out, you've got this army of campers for the last 10 years that have listened to Francis and are like, man, I'm all in.
Yeah.
This is the older generation that is sitting here going like, and yet they use the digital, they use the mediums that they had at the moment.
For sure.
To spread the word of God, spread the gospel, or just the insight that God had given them for their generation. And so I'm like, how do we do that faithfully now? I agree with you. I think we're at a place where we can't do before you go anymore because they can pick up a phone. They're like, why would I jump through all 50 of your hoops when I can just like start talking?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so I'd rather do the as you go thing than before you go. But I know it's messy.
Well, and a lot of these young people, then you just got to think the only time they're hearing from pastors and leaders, it's one of two reasons. One, help my church grow their digital platform.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of them help me grow my digital platform.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, come speak at my youth event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would say, you know, can they help you digitally? Maybe. I don't know. Like what works for somebody often doesn't work at all for somebody else. And then the other thing is like, are they even ready to be on stage just because they have a following?
Yeah.
Like that doesn't mean, you know, it's like the bands, the artists. I mean, I've traveled with bands for 15 years. It's like people think because you sing a good song that you're like an angel.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of these people, I wouldn't let babysit my kids. Like they're,
yeah,
you know, and it's just, it's not. Yeah. I mean, so again, I think it is just like, we want what's real. Like we want what's real. And so, yes, like what we need, like, I'll just say what's helpful for me is again, like it's pastors and leaders. Like, how am I living this out in my daily life? And if I'm living this out in my daily life, like that's the most exciting thing in my life. Right. So if I'm praying for my neighbor or I'm asking God to use me or I'm meeting somebody in the wild, like, that is incredible. That's an incredible feeling for me. It's incredible content for me to use. Hey, man, let me tell you, two encounters I had this week, it was awesome. Like, that's way more inspiring for people than let me give you an exegetical look at Romans 5.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate Romans 5. I need Romans 5, right? Yeah. I need it. But if you can mix that in of like, so what does this look like? Well, last week I was here. Or, you know what, man, last week I was praying and you know, I wanted to say something and I didn't. You know why? Because I was afraid. You know, and I just think like the humanity of that, like this is not meant to keep it in these walls. This is meant to go out. And these young people, I mean, I'll say it to them, like if you're only sharing Jesus when the lights are on, then you're just a performer. Like, mm-hmm. like we want this to be an everyday thing of no, like we love Jesus. Like we don't love Jesus just during the worship set, man. We love him. And like, we don't just love him when we're preaching, man, we love him. And because we love him, like we burn to see people know him.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, are some of us easier to do that than others? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that doesn't get us off the hook of being like, hey, I'm going to have coffee this week with two people. What am I going to talk about?
Right.
Is it just going to be that the Timberwolves lost again?
Again.
You know? You know, which is the valid and very heart-wrenching conversation, but it's like, you know what, like, or can it move in a more eternal destination? And that's the goal of the people of God, is that we are always using the things around us, man. Doesn't it, like I said to somebody, I said, man, you know, being a Minnesota sports fan really makes it easier to long for heaven. And and he laughs and he, what do you mean? And I was like, well, we never get any gold here. You know? And he burst out laughing. And I just said, you know, like the things of this world, they're all fading away, you know, like none of this stuff satisfies, like it's all temporary, but is there more? There's gotta be more, you know? And I think that's the conversations we want to drive. So digitally, there is a revival happening in the digital space. I mean,
oh, very much so.
Gen Z will describe it actually as during the pandemic, they describe it as like there was a TikTok revival that happened long before the Asbury revival. Like,
yes,
these kids started to share the gospel there, and they're literally teaching kids over TikTok how to baptize themselves in the bathtub in their house.
Yeah.
Like this kid came to Christ, and then it's like a week or two later, hey, fill your bathtub in Jesus' name, dunk, you know? And it's just like this was happening online.
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands of young people coming to Jesus, and massive spiritual hunger, massive curiosity, massive questions. And this is happening, whether the church is aware of it or not. I just think it's like those that are making room, that have room. God, I want to make room for you, and I want to make room for what you're doing. I want to make room for this generation.
Mm-hmm.
like there's tons happening.
Yeah. Yeah. When all that stuff was happening, I was sitting there with a bunch of pastors and they're going like, well, that's not real baptism. I'm like, far be it from me to tell you that when your grandkid that lives 500 miles away is looking and talking to you on FaceTime, that that's also not a real relationship.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And like, this is something that I have been talking about with the church for a long time. It's like the Holy Spirit showed Peter on a roof a sheet full of animals because Peter was too racist to understand that God was doing something new with the Gentiles.
Yeah.
Then the Holy Spirit said, hey, three men are coming to hang to knock on your door. I sent them, go with them. I guarantee you, Peter didn't realize what was happening until he was on the way there. Because by the time he got to Cornelius, he's like, I'm not even supposed to be here or talking to you. I can't even be seen with you guys. And yeah. Yet the Holy Spirit's doing something with you and I'm late to the party. It was him that realized everything that the Holy Spirit was dealing with him about food on a roof had nothing to do with food, had everything to do with people. And I'm like, Peter goes back and he's like, guys, the Holy Spirit outmoved our theology. We've got to figure this out.
Yes, yes, for sure.
And so,
for sure. I mean, one of my friends is a British evangelist named J. John. He says there's two reasons people don't know Jesus. Number one, they've met a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, they've never met a Christian, you know? And, yes. And it's like, and it's so interesting, right? And I do think like, we just have to recognize, like, we don't have a shepherd problem. We have a sheep problem.
Mm.
And we keep looking to sheep for solutions when we only have one shepherd. You know, and I think it's like, we think, oh, that's an influencer sheep. Oh, that over there, that's the best-selling sheep. That over there, you know, and it's like, man, it's like, I can be inspired. If they're inspiring me to look to the one, then it's great, but I just think, again, it's coming back to God. What are you doing? What are you saying? How are you moving? How do I break free from all of this like false stuff that I've put my hope in and all the things that I've made my faith about that it was never supposed to be about? And, you know, and I just think like it's this perpetual story of like, I moved from being the younger brother in the prodigal son that's so thankful to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day I become the older brother, judging and resenting those that are getting in. And it's just like, no, where is my posture here of like, may I never forget the joy of my salvation. And may I never forget that it's his grace that extended to me that now I can extend to others. Right. But it's so easy for me to get to that point of like, oh man, I can't believe they're baptizing. They didn't even take the class. Like, where did the class come from? I didn't see the class. Which part of the Bible is that class coming from? Like, it's just, you know, but we just turn these things into law. And that doesn't mean there's no checks and balances, but it's just young people are going to go. They are going. They are moving. They are leading. They are stirring. And either the church has room for them or they will start their own version. And we are in, it's a reformation.
Yeah.
But it also is, there's a new beginning. Like this is, There are going to be new expressions and iterations, and what does it look like? And we should be excited about that. Like, yes, we need to question, and we need to have. But you know what? It's better to question if you're in their life, mm-hmm. than it is to question as like an armchair quarterback that's just kind of crabby, you know. And so it's like, get in their life, take interest, care, ask questions, invest in them, you know, and. And I think that's where it's like we need, like, revival is never one generational. Like it's the old will tell the young. It's the zeal and the wisdom, right? And it's like, we need each other. We need each other. But what stands in the way, I think both are very unbiblical postures. One is an unbiblical posture that you're the young leader and you think those old people need to get out of the way. That is like not a biblical posture.
No, it's not.
Okay. And then the other unbiblical posture is, it's my turn. Wait your turn. I earned this.
Wait your turn, yes.
I earned this.
Yep.
I earned this. You know, and you're fighting them off. And you see this where older leaders are guarding their turf mm-hmm. and younger leaders are resenting. And it's like, no, like we need each other. Like we need each other.
Yeah.
And yes, is it hard as a leader to be like, you know what? I'm not the young leader anymore. Like part of my call now is to make space for those that are coming.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? How do I do something that wasn't done for me?
That has been a challenge that I have had to deal with myself. Cause I was like, you know, there was a resentment that was building in me because I kept getting told, wait your turn, wait your turn, wait your turn.
Yes. Yeah.
And coming into it, you know, almost 40 now going, I don't get the option. If we're not going to be like the generation that screwed me over, we're going to have to start now with giving them a turn before they're ready.
For sure.
You know, and I've got to forgive the people that didn't let me have my shot earlier at the same time. You know, otherwise I'm going to turn into them in the process.
Yep. And these are strongholds that have existed a long time. And it's, you know, and again, I think it's just like, I need, you know, I'm so thankful for those that made space for me. And man, I can't even grow to be thankful to those that taught me the wrong ways. Like I just, mm-hmm. I'm thankful that I got to see things, you know, and even if I saw it the way I wouldn't have wanted to, like I'm thankful because it's like that shapes me and changes me. Like I don't want it to harden me, but it is like, man, how do I? And that's what for these young evangelists, it's like how we started was like honestly, a lot of my mentors were dying and a lot of my mentors were having moral failures. Mm. Right. And so it's like, you know, Ravi Zacharias passes away and all this stuff comes out. And it's like, where are the evangelists and how can they last? And what does this look like? And then it's the questions that kind of start is like, what were the things that were given to us that we can pass on? And what are the things that we wished would have been given to us that we can change it for the next generation?
Yeah.
Right. And so, hey, you're not going to be a threat. You're not going to be a threat. Like I tell our team all the time, guys, you should, you know, our donors are going to want to support them and we want to be excited about it. Yeah. Our staff are going to want to leave us to go work for them. We should be excited about it. Like, but if we don't decide that from the start, like this is, they're going to be competition and they're not competition, right? Like I have one enemy and it's not any church or other ministry or evangelist. You know, it's like, no, like, I mean, he's coming and he's lying and he's stealing and he's dividing and he's destroying. And no, like we are here to be faithful. And yeah, it's interesting though. I mean, we all struggle. We all, the comparison game, the not enough. And that's where it's just like, God, help me to delight, to know your delight in me as a leader, as a man, as your son. God, help me to know that you delight in me and that's enough.
Mm.
Right. Mm. And then whatever happens, because otherwise, man, I'm spending my whole life like trying to earn and prove and be enough. And that's just, man, that is just an exhausting, exhausting place and way to live. And we've all been there, you know, and especially a lot of guys, I think, have that. And I know it's not just guys. I think there's a lot of people who just feel that, whether it's wounds from parents or ways we remodeled it or, you know, prove it. And it's like, man, like, I don't know. Like, I want to enjoy this life. I want to enjoy my family. I want to love God more as I get older. You know, I want to be more generous. I don't want to play it safer as I get older. I don't understand that. Like, and that is just this journey and we're all in it.
So good. So good. Well, Nick, this has been a phenomenal conversation and I can't wait to get to know you a little bit more. And there's so much stuff that I'm like, man, we got to talk to Peyton. I got to get you in front of my guys because this is very important what you're talking about. But if there's a church planter out there that says, hey, I want to know more, what do they do?
Yeah. I mean, you can message me online, you know, Instagram or whatever else is your thing. Our website's pulse.org. you can drop us a note there. There's training tools and events and things happening. We do a big training every year in Arkansas, which I know is everybody's vacation dream spot. But we had people from 24 states come last year.
Where at in Arkansas?
It's right outside of Little Rock. So we, it's a big festival, and then we do a training, and trainings for leaders, trainings for pastors, trainings for believers. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, like, we have a lot of stuff here in Minneapolis where we're based, and then we go everywhere. So,
okay,
you know, if there's the desire to see something happen, like, we're here to serve the church, and
yeah,
you know, our fruit grows on other people's trees. So that's absolutely the way we want it to be.
Well, Nick, my wife is from Arkansas. So,
oh, come on, man.
Yeah. Every time I preach, I got to tell people about Arkansas. Did you know the toothbrush was invented there, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because everywhere else it would have been called a teeth brush.
Ha! There we go.
Yeah, no, I have to give her a hard time every time. So no, it's good. She's awesome, man. But man, thank you very much for hanging out with us today. Yeah, it was great, man. Thank you.
I thought you were going to say it was a toothbrush because they only have one tooth.
Yeah, right. That's everywhere else it would have been called the teeth brush.
There we go. Yes, they just had the one to work on.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So good.
Slow to the party. Slow to the party.
It's okay. It's all right. You know, good stuff. All right, man. Well, thank you very much. It was an honor.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Appreciate you.